All right, so I am aware that I'm standing between all of you and beer. And as fate would have it, I got this photo right by my house last weekend, yes. This actually used to be my bicycle shop. Fortunately, I already own the bicycle, so I don't need another one. But I will be frequenting it for beer without the bicycle. So now that we're all inspired, right? Okay, here we go. So bold statement time. Yes. Service bus messaging. That's what I'm here to talk today about. This is, in my opinion, the most sophisticated cloud messaging platform in the world. And platform is in PaaS, like platform as a service. It's one of our oldest, I guess our second oldest service. Service bus is one of the three like original launch services that was in Azure, but that was Relay. Who here has used a messaging product of any kind in the past? And I don't mean like chat and IM and text. If that's your messaging product, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place. Please. You're welcome to leave. I won't hold it against you. Good. A lot of messaging experience. My real background and part of why I'm excited for this specific talk is in messaging, what I've spent pretty much my whole career doing. So if it is a messaging product of the last 20 years, I've probably worked with it. That would be like TIBCO, MQ, MSMQ. Anyone use that? Yeah, great stuff. I did awesome things with that and terrible things. BizTalk, Sonic, I'm trying to think, there's a whole lot. If it's a good or bad messaging product, I've probably worked with it, for better or worse. I've left a path of messaging in my past. So that begs the question, why would you use messaging, right? So that's a good question, I suppose. Other than the fact that it's an odd-numbered decade, so that messaging seems to come back into style every other decade, and we're back in style now, so increased availability, that's the number one thing people use messaging for, right? You're trying to decouple your components, you're trying to protect the components from each other so they can scale independently, so you can update them independently and without propagating changes all the way through. You can provide elasticity with messaging, so that's a great way to be able to deal with spiky scale, things like that. You can also do things like overcome temporal coupling. I gave was that this Monday? The Integration Mondays, where I talked about the differences between like real-time communication versus messaging-based communication. So a lot of people sit there and say, well, it's so easy to just call a service. It's so easy to call a REST service today. Why don't you just call a REST service? For a lot of times, that's true, but it's not always the case, especially because people think about the analogy being like a mobile phone. You know, you could take out your I never keep anything in my pockets when I talk, so I don't fidget. You could take out your phone and you can call anyone, right? It's a good analogy to some extent, but something like a direct web service call is really not like your mobile phone. It's like a phone 30 years ago. There's no call waiting. It's certainly not mobile. You have to be somewhere to get the call, and the caller and recipient need to know about each other. So these are things that you're overcoming with messaging. And that temporal coupling piece, that's actually one of the most complex types of coupling that'll find its way into your software systems. And there are two ways it will express itself. One is that both sender and receiver needing to be online at the same time, that's the easy one. The other is sort of like the sequence that things need to happen in. So if you're writing like a transactional system and you're doing a debit and a credit, you know, certain types of financial transactions and stuff, we usually don't think about too deeply the fact that we're making some sort of coupling in the sequence of calls that we're imposing on other people. So you might think we've created this great RPC style or whatever web service style integration, but in reality we've made something even more fragile and brittle than what it was there before, because you know, it's got temporal coupling or sequence coupling that's not really obvious. And I already talked about this one. And then the last piece, simplifying programming models. This is actually, I believe this is actually really true. We'll talk about a few programming models today that can be greatly simplified with messaging. And really what the focus today is going to be about, like title said, was availability, scalability, and reliability. So Azure messaging, what are people doing with it? It turns out to be quite a lot. Queues and Topics today does 300 billion messages a month. That's actually grown. You're the first audience I'll tell this to because I haven't even told my team yet. I just saw it the other day on the way out here. It's actually grown 25% in the last month. So I don't know who in here is using service bus messaging. Anyone? Must be someone, because it's growing a lot. And there are 1.5 million queues and topics out in the wild right now. and 30,000 active messaging namespaces. So common messaging patterns. Again, it's one of these big lists. I'm not going to talk about all of these, but you can take a glance at it yourself. And do any of these patterns look familiar to you, or have you used any of these patterns in the past? Anyone think of any of these? I know some of the ones that I see a lot are load leveling, load balancing, routing, claim checks, that sort of stuff, correlation. So what would correlation be a good example of? Convoy processing, if you're a BizTalk person, would be something that's like that. So these are all really common messaging patterns, things that people do with messaging. And these are the features that we enable to let you do those things. So these are features of service bus messaging. That's why I say it's the most sophisticated messaging platform. It's things like scheduled delivery. Scheduled delivery lets you enqueue a message into our service that's not visible until a future time. This is really useful if you have something you want to send and you want to make sure it's delivered and safe, so you don't want the responsibility to know that you need to send it later. And you can just enqueue it and it won't be visible to anyone until later. Forwarding, defer. Defer is my favorite feature. Anytime I get to talk about messaging, I always bring it up because it's a way to take something off a queue and say, I'm not ready for this now. Just go away. It's the feature I wish I had in life. Transactions, we'll talk about that. Duplicate detection, sessions. These are all sort of important things. And these, again, this is a big list. This is why I say like this is such a sophisticated platform, because you can look at other cloud providers and they just don't have all of these features. At a real high level, just to make sure everyone's on the same page about what I mean by messaging, let's talk about the simplest example of a queue. So a queue is going to be some sort of entity in the cloud, in our case, where you're going to send a message to. So sender sends it to the queue, which is a broker, a message broker, and the receiver receives it from that queue. The important thing here is we've decoupled the sender from the receiver. The sender has no idea who the receiver is. You can impose authentication and other things to overcome some of the things that might make that statement sound scary. But it's really bought us a lot already, because we've already isolated these two things from each other. So we can change one without the other knowing about it. Really, we've put a contract in between them. As long as we're all on the same page, move on past that. Real quickly, life cycle of a message. So how does queuing really work? So you got a queue, you send a message to a queue, a reader's gonna read that message out of the queue, and they have to mark it as complete, meaning it's gonna go away. This is traditional PubSub, traditional enterprise messaging stuff, right? You read it from the queue, you delete it from the queue. We do have this concept of a poison message. It's a term that's been around probably since the 80s or before. And that's that you can get messages that are impossible to process. They could be formatted wrong. They could have been sent to the wrong place. End result is it's a poison message. So our service is going to automatically, every time you try to read a message, increment the delivery count. This is to make sure that we can dead letter the messages, meaning take them off the queue so they won't get in your way. We do this automatically in our service. And these are the defaults. The default retry count is 10. Messages will dead letter. My biggest support issue with our messaging platform is that people never look in the dead letter queue. It fills up the queue. It's still part of the queue. It's still there. And it takes up your space, and eventually it fills up. So, okay, now we know what messaging is. Now I want to talk a little bit about availability and availability in our platform. The service bus is already highly available within regions. I'll go a little bit into this right now. But how available it is depends on what of those features that I put on the screen earlier you're using. This is a talk from New Zealand 2 weeks ago that is a very deep talk about availability that if you're interested in or using some of those advanced features of Service Bus, I would encourage you to go look at. I don't think since I went to Microsoft a year and a half ago, I don't think I've ever given the same presentation twice. So I don't want to go over that material. If you're interested in it, go and see it. Real quick, high-level architecture service bus is going to look a little familiar from this morning. We have these front-end things. We have these back-end things. Something that's different is our storage layer is SQL. So at least for a shared platform, that's the truth. And you create a queue, and it goes and lives on some server, at least temporarily. Service Fabric's making sure it's available. And the storage for that is some specific SQL server. So we're getting some good stuff here, actually. We're using premium SQL Azure. We get some good availability out of this. We get triple replication. So SQL Azure is already triple replicating every write and read, you know, or every changing operation, state changing operation, so writes to our database. So instantly we're getting replication within the region. So even if the database in that diagram that we're talking to, the server just went away, it's not like we're going to lose any data. Yes, thank you, Service Fabric. We're also getting worker and node recoverability, because those front-end workers are totally stateless, so it doesn't matter if they all go away, well, as long as there's a couple left. And the back-ends are just workers. So all of our service is actually written on services that you can use yourselves. We do use PaaS, so compute, the V1 PaaS. We actually run Service Fabric on it ourselves, so it's not that we're using the new V2 PaaS service. We're actually just installing it. Service Fabric's just an MSI. We have been using Service Fabric for a long time. If you install Service Bus for Windows Server, and there is a Service Bus for Windows Server, even though it's a little, about 2 years old now, it actually installs Windows Fabric without really asking you. And you can see that it's there, and that's how we provide HA for our on-prem solution. We now call Windows Fabric Service Fabric, but if you have installed Service Bus and you wondered what these like six services that get installed are that are called Windows Fabric, that's what it is. So we get a lot from that. Now, we are getting a lot, but there are some areas to improve here. Some of them are kind of critical, too. So anyone ever have a VM reboot on them or not be responsive or something? Never. So that happens. Like, and again, I mentioned that we run a big service doing a lot of messages all the time. We roll updates all the time. We cannot turn off our service to do updates. So we go and patch each of these machines in a specific sequence, even if they have to do a reboot, to try and minimize any sort of downtime. But there can be 10 or 30 seconds where one of those machines that your stuff was on isn't available. And in that 10 seconds, it's failing over to another machine, and you might get a retry exception from that or a timeout exception. Yes, question.
So the Service Bus is deployed to all of the Azure DCs, right?
Yes, everywhere.
Everywhere, and has been for a long time. Is there any order of magnitude to the size of your pool of compute that you need to run a service this big? Like anything you can disclose, like how many, what's the order of magnitude here?
Yeah, I'd say globally, so we've experienced a lot of growth over the last year in particular. And globally right now, our server footprint's probably up to about 5,000 servers. So yeah, the issue for us is that we try to keep our deployments sort of uniform. And that results in us having a little too much capacity in some places and too little capacity in other places. But we don't want to have every place be unique, because we want to know what we can expect out of the performance. Like, just so, you know, in the cloud as well as on-prem, not everything's going to grow or scale linearly. You know, twice as many computers isn't always going to be twice as fast. So we try to design for specific units. And in the past, we made these things. Actually, the diagram I had up before would have been fairly accurate. I think we had 16 front ends, 16 back ends. That's no longer the case. Now we do like 64 or larger, especially for our big private workloads. And so our worker stuff actually works pretty well for us. We figured out how to make that work really well. But there are other things that can happen too. So we're dependent on SQL and on compute. You know, either of those can have an issue. These are the same issues you might face, especially because until fairly recently, we were actually SQL's biggest user in the world, SQL Azure's. When you're the biggest user of anything, you're probably going to run into the most problems, just the way statistics work. So important to keep that in mind, right? This is my favorite Japanese expression, that even monkeys fall from trees. So there are other things we can do to improve that, especially because we were using SQL. We were the hipsters of SQL Azure. We were using it way before it was cool. And before there was a premium option. So premium SQL Azure is pretty awesome. But when we built our platform, it didn't exist, and we had to use shared. And premium only exists because of a Service Fabric. So because of things we've built in that time. So in that time, before we had premium, we created something called partitioned entities. And it's the default of how you use a queue or something in our system. And instead of being one machine hosting your entity, we're creating a bunch of partitions. Right now, the number is actually 16, so this is simplification. And each of those partitions is like a shard of your queue or your topic. And this means that we get a lot of availability. So when you're sending to a queue, it doesn't matter if the machine's rebooting. You'll get pushed to one of the other partitions. And again, we're actually using many databases now, too. So we're sharding across databases and across servers, active-active all the way. And each of those databases, which owns a shard, is already getting replication. So it's not like we're just riding on the replication that was there. This is active, active all the way across. So this is buying us a lot, actually. Here we've improved stuff considerably. If a role goes down, its SQL is picked up by somewhere else. So the health of the platform increases a lot. Again, I don't know why we left the number 16. That was the wrong number of partitions to choose, probably. It's a pretty big number. We're probably going to change that pretty soon, very soon, actually. I already wrote the press announcement for it. I'm not going to tell you when, though. So availability patterns. So this is what's available in our – this is availability on our side. This is important stuff to know, especially because some of those features require pinning to a specific node. That's what the talk in New Zealand is about. So this is important for you to know when you're using our service. And our service is pretty indicative of a lot of cloud services. Next, there's some availability patterns of things you can do to improve your availability. So the first one I want to talk about is paired namespaces. This is a feature that we built into our SDK quite a while ago, actually. And it's a client implementation, really. It's kind of just sugar on our SDK. It's very, very easy to implement, but it does require a little bit of work on your part. And how this works is that you take your sender like you normally have, and your sender is sending to some sort of queue. And you create a paired queue, or a paired namespace, actually. It's the whole namespace in another region. It should have the same stuff in it, same queues, whatever. This is what the client takes care of for you. And you're just sending away to the primary. And your applications just call send on our API and stuff goes. But if that primary becomes unavailable, the client redirects to this paired namespace. So the idea behind this is to use different regions, not the same region. You're not really getting a lot if you put them in the same region. Because if our whole cluster was to go down in one region, it's probably a big deal. This gives you really good send availability. What you have to do here to make this work is you need to implement some sort of siphon, some sort of process that will look at this secondary region and then push the messages back to the primary region. Typically, this is going to be something like a worker role. It just sits there and it looks. It could be a very small worker role most of the time. It just sits there and it looks, and it's trying to read. Nothing's there, so it just keeps waiting. And when stuff shows up, it will push it to the primary. The downside with this pattern is that it's not high available on the receive side, right? You're pinned to the single primary region. You're never reading directly from that secondary region. So this is a bit of a limitation. So we've solved some problems and given you a few other problems. But, you know, if your most important aspect to you is send availability, which it very well might be, then this is a good pattern for it. The next one I want to talk about is multicast across regions. This is actually used by one of our, this specific example I'm even going to bring up is used by one of our friends in the Xbox team, the live events people. Very sophisticated implementation. It's pretty good. This is easy to implement. It's really highly available for both send and receive because it's duplicating a lot of stuff. The downside for it is that latency will grow over time, especially like more regions you add further apart. And then this last piece is that it requires idempotent processing to be done correctly. That is a word I would encourage you to be very careful in English with spell check on. So senders, the way this works is you pick a bunch of regions, you create stuff in different regions, and you send to all of those regions. The specific example we'll walk through in a little bit is actually topics, not queues, but we'll just, for simplification, do this. Then you have a reader read from all of those regions. So what you're doing here is you're sending, in this case, four times, and you're reading four times. You're only going to process that message once. That's why you need the idempotent processing. But you're getting really good availability. So how you do this is by stamping some sort of ID on the message yourself. This is a value you choose. How this is used by the Xbox people is that they have four regions set up. They have all of their senders sent to all four regions to a topic in all four regions. Each of the four regions has four subscriptions, really one for each region. Then they have receivers in each region that are reading from all the topics, their own region and other regions. And so it's a fully connected graph. And then they're writing to storage after that or whatever their storage is. And these are all different regions. This is a pretty sophisticated pattern in some ways. It's very simple in other ways. So, yeah, there's some overhead. There's some traffic. This is actually a backup channel for this team. They use SignalR as their primary. But they're doing live video production, basically. So it's kind of not acceptable for it to not work. So this is their backup for it. And it's already helped them out quite a bit, actually. So we're pretty happy with that. This is a really good pattern you can implement easily. It might look like a lot, but these are literally just copies of each other. So it's just deploy it four times instead of once. Active load balancing is another one. This one, man, those Xbox people do a lot. This one's actually from Halo. Halo does this. They send a message to one of two regions actively. The client makes a decision when it's going to send that message of which region it's going to send to. So it either sends to one or to the other. This is pretty cool because although it might be a little bit more work, not necessarily too much, it's a bit more work because your client needs to make a decision. It didn't have to make a decision before. But you're actually getting load balancing off this. So especially if you've built your client in a sort of sophisticated way, a way that you can update it or send more regions to it, you can actually scale out with this really well. So that's exactly what the Halo team does. Another aspect of availability is transactions. So this is actually a feature in our service, but it's going to help you with availability. Because ultimately, what is availability, right? It's about consistency. So we do support transactions in our service. So you want to make a transaction, obviously, like what we think of, it's going to be that you want to make multiple operations against a single entity. So you want to maybe send a message, and then you want to be able to receive that message from the entity and send back another message. But you want them either to both happen or neither happen. You know, this is gets really important when you're doing things like workflow. So sessions work against single entity. That's because we don't do our distributed transactions. We don't do distributed transactions in the cloud because they're not scalable. So if you, any fans of Martin Fowler in the room, anyone read his stuff? Nice. Yeah, I'm showing my age now. So the pattern that this would be transaction script. We're just keeping a transaction script behind the scenes. And you can do lots of sends, lots of reads, whatever. So transactions, powerful feature in our platform, something you should be taking advantage of. The next feature I want to talk about is sessions. So sessions are pretty good too because they're super powerful. But the easiest thing you can think about with sessions, so we have this competing consumer model, right? It's not like the model that we talked about this morning, which was Event Hubs, which is a partitioned consumer model. Queues are like databases. So a database is the ultimate competing consumer. Has anyone ever run into like deadlock issues with SQL or any database like that? Yeah, right. That few people, God, we all know SQL crowd. What kind of technology are you using? So the competing consumer model means that people are fighting for the same thing. In the case of a database, in the case of SQL, actually, that's going to be a latch or a lock on a specific part of the database. The problem is eventually they start fighting so hard for it that it's not available for everyone. So you get more contention fighting for the resource than getting the resource. That's why SQL has certain limits. Oracle has certain limits. Products built on them have certain speed limits and characteristics. You can use sessions, though, to enable competing consumer. To enable competing consumer to do things like ordered messaging. So ordered messaging is kind of tough. Here, let's look at it. What's so hard about order? It's the easiest concept on earth, right? Just process the first one first, second one second, and third one last, right? How hard could this be? Yeah, this is the best because this is awesome on your machine. The moment you deploy this into like a cloud environment or any sort of farmed environment, this is what happens, right? Everything's out of order. So this is the crux of competing consumer. It makes something like order delivery just about impossible, even with really expensive, sophisticated products. So sessions enables you to solve this because a session is like a mini resource inside of the queue. And everything stamped with the same session, all you have to do is give it a session ID that's going to be the same across all the messages, will be in order as a resource of its own. So now you can have a lot of sessions, and they each have messages in order, and you still get competing consumer because each consumer just grabs a session rather than a message. And that way they're getting a session. It's a handle to all the messages in that session. So this is pretty sophisticated already. It's going to really change the way you can write queuing stuff. But if that wasn't enough, there's more. Yes, it's like an infomercial. Sessions also give you state. So we give you a state bag. It's just a stream. You can write whatever you want into it. This is pretty cool because you can figure out, you can do things like say, okay, not only do I want these 10 messages in order, and I want to make sure the same reader reads them. Or I want to know when I get these 10 messages, I want to keep track of which of the 10 I've already processed or what I've already done with those 10. Or I want to keep a list of what I did with these messages in case I need to roll some of those things back. So this is really what enables something like eventual consistency. This is a term that was popularized by some other cloud company in the Seattle area. I'll let you figure out who that is. I think they sell books too. Not sure. So we have a framework that we use widely throughout Azure, built on top of sessions. Sessions are kind of like one of these things that's, again, conceptually very easy. To build an eventual consistency framework on top of it is kind of harder than it at first seems. If you're doing something very simple, you can say, okay, I'm going to use a state bag, I'm going to save some stuff, whatever. If you get more complex things, it gets kind of tough. We use this durable task framework for our own services, to deploy our own services, because it allows us to use the task await model in .NET to have very simple programming API, and it takes care of all of the checkpointing and session state management behind the scenes for us. This is up on GitHub. We open sourced this more than a year ago. I gave a talk in London in the spring about it. It's cool. It's worth checking out. It's code-based workflow, so it's not like a pointy-clicky workflow thing, but it's got cool features like saving state and letting you replay it. So if you want to debug what happened, like anyone who has worked on messaging, pretty much the hardest thing on earth to do with messaging is debug, is to replay something or figure out what happened. You know, so like that's kind of tough. Has anyone ever had a problem with that in the audience? No, never? Well, we're hiring. Okay. So let's see. Let's take a quick checkpoint. Yes, Service Bus is awesome. Yeah, all right, cool. So now I want to talk a little bit about partition entities more, because they're kind of giving us two things, right? They are increasing availability. They're doing something else too, though. They're increasing maximum throughput. So they're making the maximum throughput that is available to you sending and receiving from our service a lot higher because you're spread out across a lot of machines. You might have noticed, however, that little asterisk, right? That's not funny. So it's under ideal conditions. Okay, so like that increased throughput is only under ideal conditions. So now I want to move to the part of this talk about scalability. So why do we have scale limits at all? Why does Service Bus have scale limits at all? Because, you know, I hear there's this other, again, some other company in the Seattle area that sells books that has some sort of unlimited scale queue thing. Let's talk about that. All scale characteristics are aspects of consistency. Okay. And it's really, there are two models of consistency, instantaneous or eventual consistency. Right now, I want to show you guys how to make an unlimited scale queue. All you do is create a bunch of machines, put a load balancer in front of each one, and make it the responsibility of the caller to figure out what they're doing. It's the most scalable thing on earth. So the way this works with some other models, these eventual consistency models for things like queues, are that as messages come in, they're just shard, they're just round robin across all these pieces of machines. And as you read from them, you're having to read, and you're redirected to one machine. And that machine tells you, yes, I have a message, or no, I don't. So the tricky thing about this is a logical unit, but these are physical units within it. And when you get redirected to one of them, you're only asking that one, do you have anything? So actually, if you look at this other queuing system, which is a very simple queue, that's why it's called Simple Queue Service, you have to call receive for each partition you have because you're round robin through all of them. So you have to keep calling all the time because you never know. On our system, we're actually doing instantaneous consistency. So when you call receive, we go look at all the partitions for you and we tell you if there's a message. But that puts a scale limit on what we can do, right? Eventual consistency. So yeah, this is one of those things. It took me years to understand what this really meant, actually. There are some good aspects to it. It can scale amazingly well, and it can be really cost effective, really efficient on cost, especially if you're the service provider. The bad is that for this case, you have to always call receive, which I guess if I'm the service provider is also the good because you're paying for each of those calls to receive. So I wish we had chosen that model. God. And then the ugly. So there's some ugly stuff to this too. And that is that if something goes wrong, especially if you're doing something like ordered or something that works like 99.99% of the time, you're never going to figure out what went wrong. Like it's like multi-threaded programming. When you do a lot of multi-threaded programming, which I thankfully don't have to do in unmanaged code anymore, but I wrote this phone switching software once, and it worked great for like months and months and months, and then it would just have this problem that we never figured out. Eventually, the solution was to just see the symptoms of the problem and restart the PBX. So, like, I'm not going to say what company that was for, but if your PBX just flakes out sometimes, sorry. Okay, so now I want to talk about our shared platform again, about this idea of pooling resources and about what that means for availability. So there's a very small pool. It's a tub, actually. This was my last trip from my second to last trip from Japan. It's a very nice place I stayed at in Kyoto. That tub is perfectly sized for two people, like my fiance, who I proposed to there, and me. Sorry? No, right next to it. But that is probably not the right size tub for these two people. So you probably wouldn't want to get in that tub and have to share it with these people. So this is what our shared platform's like, right? Most of the time, it's okay. But sometimes these guys show up. Or you might be one of these guys. And then the party's going to change a little bit, right? So why do you care about the shared pool? That's why right there. So there are some things to keep in mind here. Why is this an issue? Well, again, it gets back to our features part. It's because the different features on our platform have different performance characteristics. So sessions, for instance, are going to have very specific, actually not even specific demands. They're going to open up a whole Pandora's box of demands that you can make on our platform. Like you can say, I want a session with 100 messages in it. We don't know how many messages you're going to put in the session when you start it. You can say, I want to read and write from that state 1,000 times. We don't know that either. So you're allowed to make some pretty serious demands. Transactions work the same way. You can do 2 messages in a transaction. You could do 100. Duplicate detection's another one of those. Message ordering, all of these things have cost. And it's cost that we have to take into account in our platform. So if we look at what these are like, these different operations have varying amounts of resources they require. And they're going to result in different performance characteristics. So if you're doing just a basic queue, sending and receiving on a queue, it's going to be really, really fast. You're going to be able to do a lot of that. I did notice, actually, so when I stuck my head in earlier, Alan had some slide up that showed sort of some of our promises. They're not promises. Some of our statements about throughput capabilities on queues for service bus and storage queues. Those ones for service bus are making a few assumptions. Number one, they were done in a lab. Well, we can end there. There doesn't need to be a number two after that. But they're also just basic queue. So if you're doing a lot of subscriptions with duplicate detection in sessions, you're not going to get 2,000 messages a second through it. So this is an issue. It's an issue that we're solving with premium messaging, which we released a week or two ago. And premium messaging is the same product run in a different way, meant to address these exact meant to make sure you don't have to get in the tub with the big guy. So if we look at what our workloads look like from a conceptual standpoint, all these features have different amounts of things they're demanding. CPU, memory, storage IOPS, and there's no optimal mix. You know, I guess maybe naively a lot of the cloud providers years ago thought that we'd just use like free market principles, and if we had a big enough pool, everything would, the invisible hand would take care of everything, right? Turns out that doesn't quite work that way. You need a really big pool. So the issue is that customers can show up at any time and make a big, big demand on what resources they want. So we have to throttle customers to make sure that it doesn't impact other people, because this is what it looks like. So the workload shifts, and now some workloads taking up more pieces and some's taking up less. So our idea with isolated messaging is to break this out and give you specific pieces, boxes that you can fill yourself with whatever workload you want. This is a messaging unit. This is the thing that you purchase for our isolated, our premium product. So we don't charge by the transaction or by the operation anymore, which is what we do in shared. It's what all the big cloud cloud messaging platforms do. Google does it. We do it. Amazon does it. This is a different model. This is the sort of all-you-can-eat model here. So I expect it to be very popular in America. So here, you're just purchasing the unit that this will run in. You fill it with whatever you want. You can buy more than one of them, so your workloads can span across them. But it improves the overall isolation. It improves your performance. You will always get very predictable performance with the same workload. Right now, on our standard platform, which is a really good platform for most people, if you run the same workload at different times of the day, it can react different ways. It depends if the big guy showed up in the pool or not. And it depends on what else is going on, especially because our throttling, if there's no load on the system, we're not going to be as aggressive about throttling you. And we'll let you take a lot more of the pool than we probably should. Whereas if there is load on the system, we have to throttle you. And we have to be more aggressive about throttling you to make sure that other people don't get, basically you don't DDoS our entire platform. Whereas if it's empty, go ahead, have fun, knock yourself out. But we can't really give you any assurance about when it's going to be empty or not. With our premium platform, we give you that because it's your box. It's your playground. You can put whatever you want in it. It's your own tub. You get to decide who's going to come and sit in it with you. So the next obvious question is, how fast is it really? See, I told you that guy was going to hate me. And how can we test this out? A tough part with messaging is figuring out how you can actually tell how fast something is. Distributed systems are tough to measure. They're tough to build, but they're also tough to benchmark and measure and do other things with. So an easy way to test this out is actually with Service Bus Explorer. Service Bus Explorer is made by this nice gentleman who's a cat, Azure cat in Italy, Paolo Salvatore, great guy. Service Bus Explorer is a tool for exploring Service Bus, yes. It's got a nice little UI. You can see stuff. You can point and click. We don't really have a lot of UI in our cloud platform. Actually, there are a lot of features you can only see through our API. And so what Paolo did in his own time was make a tool that lets you see what these are. It's a really good tool for learning how to use Service Bus or for debugging what's going on in your Service Bus. And I might spin it up in a second just for you guys to see. So if we take a quick spin in Service Bus Explorer, okay, how fast is premium, right? It's question of the day. Everyone's dying to see it, right? This is a test I did last night, I think. Last night or the night before. So what I'm doing here is sending 1 million messages. I think I stopped this at 250,000. This kind of shows up okay. You can see my messages per second send rate. If you can't see that, it's 18,650 and change. And my receive rate, 24,000 and change. So 24,000 messages a second received. I mean, we're starting to talk about pretty serious scale at this point. Like this is fast. You can tell all you need to about the scale of these numbers here on the left. Now let's go run the same workload on standard. Well, standard did okay. It is a lot less, 422 ingress. I think a bit higher egress was over 1,000. Yeah, so I mean, this isn't bad. There's actually something though very interesting here to point out, and that's our minimum time was quite good, and our maximum time was almost 20 seconds to send a message. It's a long time. I mean, like I could write and physically deliver a message to someone in this room in less than that time. Maybe not the write part, but the physically deliver part. I'm pretty fast. I could probably do that. And receive is the same way. So the latency there went from a very small amount, so like under 100 milliseconds to 6 seconds. Look back on how that was on premium, right? Our minimum time was super small, and our maximum time was still under 2 seconds. The receive's really impressive. Our maximum receive time on 24,000 messages a second is 0.8 of a second. Is that what that says? Yeah. So we're still sub-second at 24,000. Like, that's pretty impressive. And this is a cloud service. Like, I ran this on a VM in US West against a namespace in US West. Now, sure, you could say, hey, if I put Rabbit on my super big 16-core server and send and receive to it from that same 16-core server, it's going to be really fast. Number one, this is persisted and it's replicated. Number two, it's across a bunch of servers. So sending a message within the same server might be useful. I don't know. It makes a good benchmark. So these are some things to keep in mind. What do we normally see? What we normally see, again, like that, those numbers don't mean a lot to you because it depends what you're doing with it. So Service Bus Explorer is cool because you can see what you're sending. You can define your own messages to send. You can figure out how many tasks you want to use. So like that basically equates almost to threads. And what we normally see on four messaging units, which is the biggest chunk you can buy from us, these are pretty big things and quite expensive things, is in the 12 to 16,000 cents per second and a higher number of reads. It's just the way our service works. You'll always get a higher number of reads, even in public. And we usually get very tight latency range, so 200 milliseconds. The biggest fluctuation of this tends to come not from our platform, but from how you're communicating with it. So that depends where in Azure you are or where in the world you are when you're talking to Azure. I have a couple more things to cover, but I did want to stop for a second just for some questions, if there are any. Yes, Mike. So the question is about the 200 milliseconds latency, and if that latency is too long, what else should people be using? So this is a great question in the messaging space because Microsoft's made a decision that we've kept for quite a while for messaging that all of our messaging is durable. So a lot of other messaging products, including TIBCO and Rabbit, give you an option, and it's the default option to not do durable messaging. It means it's only going to be held in memory on that machine. So if that machine restarts, you're going to lose the messages. You know, it's but the speed you can get is orders of magnitude higher, and the latency is nothing because it's just memory on a machine. There are a few things you can do to attack this in our shared platform. We have this concept of express queues. That'll lower you down a bit, but again, you're not really going to get to the sub like 10 millisecond sub, yeah, probably 10 millisecond range. If you need really low latency, the cloud might not be the right place for you. Like, it's just, the cloud's a big place, data centers are far apart, you know, unless your stuff's running there. A lot of my background was with trading companies who count microseconds, not milliseconds. So, yeah, this stuff would be way off their radar. You can use other products. I mean, MSMQ still has a volatile option and is super, super fast, you know. So if that's what you need, that's the kind of thing you need. Again, TIBCO, another option. Good products, just not necessarily what you expect, and not cloud services is the most important thing. So even if you stand up and run Rabbit on your own, it's not a cloud service, so you got a lot of work to do. The question's about Service Bus Server and if that could fill that latency gap. Service Bus Server can fill some of the gap. Right now, it's sitting on SQL Server. Oh, I guess I didn't mention this. The premium does not sit on SQL Server. It sits on something else, which is really more raw storage. It's the same storage engine we built for Event Hubs, so it works quite differently internally, but it's doing the same fundamental things. Really, we just tested it out for a year on Event Hubs first. Our next server product will be premium, so it will be what premium is, so it won't use SQL. That will give us a lot better control over how we do the storage and how fast it can be. That could potentially open that up. We are looking for the cloud service, especially in premium, to offer volatile messaging, meaning something that doesn't go to storage for every write and triple replicate everything, so that we can increase the speed a lot. We could probably get you down to like 10 milliseconds then, but you know, that's, if you want to see what that would look like, Relay is a great example. Relay works how volatile would work, which is pure in memory, super fast. And so yeah, it's something that server could potentially fix, but again, if you run server in the cloud, and not just our cloud, anyone else's cloud, it's cloud. So you're not going to get the same performance characteristics you're going to get in a private data center with a really fast, expensive SAN, with $1 million SAN sitting next to it, which is, you know, if that's what you need, that's what you need. And I don't think a cloud provider is really going to give you that easily today. Yeah, the question's about storage queues and if that's a separate team and what are the sort of characteristics of the service and how do we expect the relationship between those in the future. So Storage Queues is a separate team. We are, well, separate group within the same management team and same, I guess, part of Azure. Azure is pretty big now, but they're quite close to me. I work with those guys very closely. We are, oh, I got to be careful of that. We're in a process of making some better alignment. We actually have a bit of overlap now between our basic queue offering and Service Bus and Storage Queues, and we're trying to kind of get some synergy there. The issue is that they're really different things. So we dumbed down our, I shouldn't use that term. Oops, foot in mouth. We simplified our platform to get characteristics that are quite similar to the Storage Queue platform. Storage queues have a way higher throughput capability. They're not doing all of the SQL persistence. They're not doing transactions. They aren't doing these other things that are quite expensive. They're not going to be adding those capabilities in. So what we're going to do for our alignment aspect is make sure it's clear which is different. It was a mistake on our part to use the same word queue in both services because they sound like they're both queues. Storage queues is like Dropbox for tiny messages, for tiny data. You know, it's not, it's super fast. It's super easy. It's not terribly sophisticated from a enterprise messaging standpoint. Service bus messaging is much more rich capabilities, but it's not designed to be, you know, 100,000 a second sort of thing. Although getting premium, you're getting close. So we are working on that, but we don't have a firm, like, okay, we have a plan, but we don't have a firm timeline on the plan. So that was a great question. Thank you. All right. Time for one more, I think. Ah, that's a good question. The question is about premium and what is a messaging unit. And we've had a long debate within the team about what we should tell people about this. A very passionate and heated debate. Chairs might have been broken during it. So it is a certain... So the we're using both WinFab and Windows OS process isolation features to carve out resources within physical machines for customers, for messaging units. But it's not as easy to say that it's this much of CPU and this much of storage and this much of IOPS, largely because it's on a cluster with extra headroom to make sure that you're not pinned to a specific server so you can fail over to others. So it's not like we're giving you a core. We wouldn't have high availability if we did that, so we have to give you multiple pieces of core, you know, on in a way that preserves your high availability. So it, but it is, it's pretty raw. I mean, you are having hard isolation between your workload and others. It's not just like a throttling isolation. Good question. Would it make a big difference to people if we said exactly what these resources were? We've done the numbers, and it's price competitive to even if you stood up your own IaaS to run messaging on. So we're confident that it's cheaper than running something like Rabbit yourself. Good question, though. Maybe when I'm not being recorded, I'll tell you an answer. Okay, so key takeaways from this. Service Bus really does have a lot of availability and capacity capabilities built into it. You can get a lot out of the product, out of the platform. There's not much you do with messaging on-prem today that you wouldn't be able to do with Service Bus. Premium's really our effort to try and give you an experience that's like on-prem in the cloud. So what do people like about on-prem and what do people like about IaaS? They like the predictability, right? That's what the premium story is. It's not about cost. It's about predictability. If you want to know that your system can do 2,000 messages a second, all the time, you know, that's important for you to know, then that's the right platform for you. And also, if you want to know that the latency for response will be within a window that's acceptable to you, then that's important. So that would be cases like if you're doing live user interaction. You don't want to, you saw the latency spikes before, you don't want to wait 16 seconds on a live user interaction. That's not a happy user experience. So it's important to understand which tier of our platform you should use. Functionally, they're the exact same. So it's more about what you're trying to do with it than what features are in the platform. pick the right one for what you're trying to do. Always, I would encourage people to start off with standard. Don't start off with premium. Premium is not inexpensive. It's like $22 a day. It's half that in preview right now. We're still in preview. So make sure you have a plan. You know, make sure you know what you're doing before you get into it. Our shared platform is very inexpensive, so play around with that. Use that as your dev environments. Use that for whatever you want. But, you know, if you basically the way to know when you should switch is if you start getting server busy error. Server busy means you're being throttled. So if you're getting that a lot, it's a good indication that you should be switching to premium. I'm actually trying to see if we can be allowed to actually put that message in the exception itself. Be like, click here to upgrade to premium. Right now, marketing doesn't want me to do it. No matter what you do with Service Bus, always plan for availability. You're going to get pretty good availability. The things that hurt our customers the most is that they'll get really good availability for like a year or two. And then something will happen like the storage outage, which affected a lot of us, or other things that are, you know, could be really big in a specific region. And then their availability went away. And it's because they did the simplest thing, like, for instance, 2 years ago, we didn't have, even a year ago, we didn't have partition entities be the default. So everything's working fine for you for 9, 10 months, 11 months, and then one server reboots and you have an outage. You know, it might only be a minute, but it's still an outage for you. So always plan for availability, whether that's within a region, between regions, things like that. And most of all, go use Service Bus messaging today. And then since I always put a picture of Seamus in my presentations, this is another place in my neighborhood. It's a pub. You can actually kind of see from here that it's open for football games at 9 a.m. Unfortunately, this is before work, and Seamus tried to go. It's a dog-friendly pub, so he tries to go there all the time because it's his favorite place. And it was like 7:30 in the morning, and he tried to go, and we couldn't go in. Sorry? No, it was closed. So he tried to go in, and this is when he gave up and decided it was time to leave. Yes.
He's a big gamer. Okay, thank you for that, Dan.
Thanks.